Caesar. Julius Caesar. With Ray and Cap. Caesar was a vampire. Don't make me pull a Sulla. Life of Caesar. Hello, boys and girls. This is Uncle Cameron with a little bit of a special intro to episode 43 before Ray and I get into our hijinks. First of all, let me say that this is a shortish episode, 45 minutes or something like that, because we recorded for several hours the other day before Ray went on vacation and I just cut it into three episodes, and this is where this one came in. So makes up for the four-hour episodes of Days of Yore. But most importantly, for those of you that aren't on Facebook and aren't on our email list, which I know are most of you, we have recently started toying with the idea of what happens when we kill off Big Julie, which is going to happen in the next few weeks. Obviously, we're coming very close to the Ides of March, 44 BCE. Now, over the last 6 months, we've had literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails and Facebook requests from listeners saying, please, please, please continue on with the Second Triumvirate and the life of Augustus at the very least. And we've been going backwards and forwards and thinking about different things that we could do, different shows, different series. Do we go back to our day jobs of killing snakes and upsetting Christians? We're not really sure. However, we thought we would throw it out to you. So a few days ago, we set up a website, lifeofcaesar.com/Augustus, and we've said, look, if you really want us to continue the show and do Augustus, which, you know, Augustus was around a long time, so this could be another couple of years we're committing ourselves to here. Show us that you really, really want us to do it by signing up and becoming a patron for the Augustus fundraiser. Now, a lot of you already become patrons, and we appreciate you and want to thank you from the bottom of our solid rock little hearts. But, you know, we can see the numbers. There's tens and tens and tens of thousands of people listening to the show every week. Vast majority of you haven't become patrons. That's okay. We get it. You got better things to do with your money. And, you know, this is kind of free. So why not just take advantage of it? And you listen, you go, yeah, screw you, Cam and Ray. I'm not giving you my money. Well, if you don't, then, you know, we may decide not to do Augustus. So it's in your hands. If you want us to do it and you haven't yet become a patron, if you are a patron, don't worry about it. You're covered. If you do want us to go and do Augustus, pop over to lifeofcaesar.com Augustus and throw us a few bucks, a few shekels, a few, coins with Caesar's head on them, maybe, even if you have that. A once-off donation, you can do a monthly donation, up to you. That's it, and on with the shortish show. Hope you enjoy it.
Yep.
Okay. Well, welcome everybody to episode 43. all right, let's get straight into it.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, so let's talk about Caesar's powers and stuff. We've done a bit about this, but there's more that I want to cover off on. So he's effectively a monarch. What?
Just real quick, just to end the previous conversation that we were having, again, it's worth pointing out that Caesar publicly said that Sulla was a Berk for giving up all that power. So it gives you an idea of what Caesar's thinking, that, yeah, Sulla had it all and he had it for longer than 6 months and he was fucking cruel. But at the end of the day, he did give it up. He did retire. Caesar thought he was an idiot for giving up the power, and which tells me, obviously, he has no intention of giving it up, even though we don't know what his plans are 10, 15 years down the road. He doesn't seem to be considering giving up the power because he thought Sulla was an idiot for doing it. That's just the bookend that I wanted to put on that last conversation.
Well, look, I don't buy that statement. That's one of those statements I think is bullshit. He apparently said Sulla didn't know his ABCs when he gave up the dictatorship. And again, it's inconsistent, I think, with everything else we know about Caesar for him to say something like that. I think that was, you know, words put in his mouth by somebody who wanted to point, you know, try and point out that he wanted to be a king or a tyrant. I just don't think Caesar would, you know, I can't understand why would he benefit from saying that, relating himself back to Sulla?
I see your point and I agree with you, but the kind of the stuff that we're about to go over would suggest that he might have not said that, but he certainly does understand and grasp the wisdom of keeping power as long as he possibly can. It's not like they were saying, we're going to do this, we're going to give you this. And he's going, no, that's way too much. Thank you. You're embarrassing.
Well, he did turn down stuff, but look, I agree with you. He wasn't planning on giving the power up. Absolutely not. But because, you know, and again, I don't think it was out of any sort of love of power. It was because he knew what a fuck up Rome was. Somebody needed to sort it out, and he didn't trust anybody else.
Yeah.
And plus, he also knew he'd made so many enemies that...
he's got to keep those guards, or he's got to keep that Imperium or that position of the guards or whatever. Yeah, he's
and he didn't. Mate,
and he didn't. Fucked up.
He
didn't.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So he's effectively a monarch. I mean, he has all of the power. But let's make a couple of important points here. The powers that he has were specifically granted to him by the Senate and the people,
which
the
he controls. Yes.
Yes. Now, you know, you get to one of these discussions and you have similar discussions about Napoleon later on, but okay, he is granted the powers. Did they feel that they were obliged or forced to grant them? Probably. But was he holding a gun to anybody's head? Not literally. Mm-hmm. But yes, they knew that, okay, this guy has, we better make this guy happy.
Right.
Because he's the most powerful military leader.
Well, not only that, but because there's so much we don't know, he could have literally have scribbled a note to Balbus, tell them to give me this on Tuesday and take it over and whatever. And then we don't know. We don't know the degree. And and this is one of those things you really just wish you could go back in time and see. I mean, how much was he pulling the strings or how much was he not? Because like you were saying, he does turn some things down, like, whoa, that's just way too much. And you would just really love to know the details of this moment in history.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, if you kind of put yourself into the headspace of what's going on there, you know, okay, if I'm the bony in the senators, particularly the ones that were on the wrong side of the Civil War, Sulla is still within living memory, so I'm thinking, okay, this guy is so far he's being benign, but we want to keep him
magnanimous.
We'll keep him happy. Yeah. So let's suck up to him as much as possible. Right.
Where's the red carpet? Let's get out the red carpet.
Yeah.
Or Tyrian purple carpet in this case.
Yeah. But, you know, so here's the point. Regardless of what the Senate's motivations are for granting him all these powers, the Senate granted him the powers.
That's true. They were legally conferred on him.
He didn't walk up and declare himself dictator.
Right.
The Senate declared him dictator. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they did it out of fear or whatever, the Senate and the people gave him these powers. So it was legitimate. True. You can't say, you know, it wasn't legitimate. Now, and I guess another point that I want to make here is that a lot of the powers that he was given had been given to other people before.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't unusual. Of course, we know Sulla has been dictator. We know that Sulla resigned it after 6 months, but he had been granted it without limit. Let's remember that.
Yeah.
Even though traditionally dictators have been given power for 6 months, Sulla was granted it without an end date.
Right. And he did could have a kept sword. It. Yeah, and he did have a sword to people's throats, or at least the ones that were still alive. But yeah.
Yeah. And he went through and, you know, killed everyone in the prescription. So, but he resigned when he chose, but it was when he chose.
Right.
So let's remember that this is not unprecedented, giving somebody like this dictatorship for life. It's not that, oh, my God, Caesar was dictator for life and that's completely unreasonable. Well, it happened before.
Yeah, there's precedent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, that happens in early 44 too, the dictatorship for life. He's also awarded the censorship for life.
Yeah. But he had been doing that already. He'd already been kicking people out of the Senate, bringing people in the Senate. That just made it – that was more of a formality. That made it official. But he had been doing those duties already for years. But it was nice. It was nice to have the badge.
And he's already Pontifex Maximus.
Right. Yep.
Now, other honors he was awarded at this stage, Father of the Country.
Nice.
But again, Cicero had been awarded that as well after mm-hmm. the Catilinian conspiracy. So again, not usual.
Right. Yeah. Parens Patriae. And actually Gaius Marius was, after kicking the Germans' ass, he was called the third founder of Rome, the first man in Rome. So again, the Romans are used to passing out very impressive titles to men who do great things, not on the law courts, but on the battlefield. That's just part of their culture.
One of the most impressive things he was given the ability to do was handing out the spolia opima.
Yeah.
The highest spoils.
I'd never heard of that one. So basically he was able to guess give out, you know, if you have a battle and whatnot, you're handing out spoils to your troops, that you could give that honor to someone who would get the highest spoils. I mean, that's how I understood it. But I'd never heard of that until I came across it getting ready for this episode. And it's just weird to me. You think the general would be the one getting the highest spoils or whatever. But again, and I thought it was weird that you really are technically only supposed to earn this right when you are the leader of an army and you kill the other leader in personal combat. I think they just kind of skipped right over that and just wrote it down on a piece of paper and gave him that right. But supposedly that was a very big deal that obviously he didn't get a chance to use it all that much.
Well, this was considered even more prestigious than a triumph.
Wow. I can't believe I'd never heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you personally killed the commander of the enemy in personal combat, and then you could strip him of his armor and his arms and any other effects, and then you could hand those out as rewards to people.
Nice.
And it also included military standards and peaks of warships. You could, like, take all of the shit and hand them out to your soldiers.
That'd be impressive.
And it was, yeah.
Yeah, that is impressive. Yeah.
And the Romans recognized only three instances in their entire history.
Wow.
When spolia opima had been taken.
Mm-hmm.
It started back in 752 BCE when Romulus defeated Acro, the king of the Caenenses, the dog people, following the rape of the Sabine women.
Right. Wow.
That was the first instance.
Mm-hmm.
The second instance was when Aulus Cornelius Cossus obtained the spolia opima from La Tolumnius, the king of the Velentes during the regal period. And the third, and probably the only historical one, was during the Second Punic War when Marcus Claudius Marcellus,
right,
consul in 222 BCE,
mm-hmm,
stripped the Celtic warrior Viridomarus, who was the king of the Gesetae.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it was a religious ceremony as well, apparently. It was the way it was performed is, and this apparently goes back to Romulus, but you would take the stripped armor,
mm-hmm,
and affix it to the trunk of an oak tree and carry it in procession to the Capitol Hill and dedicate it at the temple of Jupiter Ferretrius.
Nice.
Now, stop for a second and think about this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
A suit of armor, maybe on a wax figurine of the enemy, carried on the trunk of an oak tree, which would look similar to a
cross,
crucifix.
Oh, yeah. Don't
being
know where-
carried through the streets in a big ceremony.
Can't imagine where you're going with this.
Yeah. Stick around, folks.
There are no new ideas. Oh, and so having said that, that's probably why Colin Firth, what's his name? Colin the guy from the actor, Farrell, or Alexander, while he threw that spear at Darius, he was trying to personally take out the leader of the enemy forces, which, again, you have to admit, that's just impressive as hell if you can accomplish something like that.
Stop changing streams, man.
Like, sorry.
Don't cross the streams.
Sorry. Don't. Sorry, iPod.
Never cross the streams, right? Caesar was also able to sit with the tribunes of the people at the theater.
Yes, he was.
And what about his ivory chair of office?
Oh, you know, ivory's nice, but, you know, it could be better. So they took out his ivory chair that was in between the consul's chair in the Senate, and they replaced it, or they decorated it with gold. So he got the chair 2.0 for this. So again, there is nothing they cannot do for this man that they're not willing to. And like you said, he's taking most of these honors, not all of them, but they are just in every way just inching him towards being a king. But these people, these senators, these citizens have had hundreds of years to learn to hate the idea of kings. So he is, like you said, he is king in every way except for the actual word.
Mm. And of course, you know, we have to ask ourselves at some point in this mm-hmm. process, were they deliberately setting him up? Were they granting him all of these things to make it easy then to turn around and go, look at all this shit that he's got.
Right.
This guy wants to be king. Was it a setup?
That's a good point.
But before we get to that, it was replaced with gold. Poor elephants whose tusks were taken to make this chair in the first place. Right. And how do you carry a golden chair around? That's what I want to know. Because this thing had to be moved from here to there.
Yeah.
Like 100 slaves.
Yeah, I was going to say at least eight men, four on each side with long poles. But the real question is, Cam, after we're done and they've given us a lot of awards for doing these podcasts and you rename a month for your birthday, what's going to be the name of that month when they honor you like they honored Julius?
Well, it's the same as the name of the coffee that I invented. It's the Cameroni.
Oh, I like that. January, April, May, June, Cameroni.
Well, it would replace October because that's my birthday. Okay. And October doesn't make any fucking sense anyway because it's got nothing to do with eight anymore. So I figured we'd just change it. My birthday will henceforth be known as the 10th of Cameroni. What about you?
I don't know. I never think of answers to these things because you got Ray, you got Reyes, Reynus,
Raimondo.
I like that. Raimondoes, you know, whatever, but yeah.
Yeah. So they changed, the month to July. Although, I've read that happened after he died. Some sources I read say it happened during this period when he was dictator. Other sources I read say it happened afterwards.
Right.
I don't know what the definitive answer to that is, but his birthday became a public festival. He was also the first Roman to be depicted on coins minted during his lifetime.
Yeah,
big
he was.
Fucking deal. That's
right. That is a big deal, actually. Yeah.
Although he only appeared on some coins, it wasn't until Augustus that his head appears on all of the coins. But let's point out again that all of these awards had been awarded to other famous Romans, Scipio Africanus the Elder and the Younger, Marius Sulla, Pompey, Cicero, but no one had as many of them as JC.
Exactly.
It was unprecedented.
Yeah.
His statue was included in the procession of the gods at the opening ceremonies of the games, a bit like our old mate Philip. Don't cross the streams. There were more statues of him placed around the temple and the capital.
Yeah.
Now, there's a story that before he even gets back to Rome, after his victory at Thapsus, a statue of Caesar set up showing him standing on a globe with the inscription "To the Unconquered God."
Yeah.
But when he gets back to Rome, he sees that and he goes, get rid of that. Get rid of that inscription.
Tacky. Yeah.
But. Again, there's dispute about this in the sources. Some sources say he left it there. Some say he had it removed. But we do need to talk about the fact that he is now being called quite openly a god. And this goes even further. So, you know, and I'll talk a lot about this. We now have JC saying, love your enemies, and he's being declared a god.
Exactly.
And a cult. That's right. Built up around this, which we'll talk about in a second.
And at the very least, the very, very, very least, he is now seen by those that matter as semi-divine of this world, but also of the heavens.
Yeah, and descended from a god is, you know, descended from Venus.
Yep.
So he's son of a god. He is also a god. He is also a man. And he is known for preaching love your enemies. He's also declared, let me read this from Appian. Having ended the civil wars, Caesar hastened to Rome, honored and feared as no one had ever been before. All kinds of honors were devised for his gratification without stint, even such as were superhuman. Sacrifices, games, statues in all the temples and public places, by every tribe, by all the provinces, and by the kings in alliance with Rome. His likeness was painted in various forms, in some cases crowned with oak as the savior of his country, by which crown the citizens were accustomed formally to reward those to whom they owe their safety. He's declared savior. What's another word for savior, Ray? Would it be Messiah?
I like that.
Messiah. What's another word for Messiah, Ray?
I don't know. I didn't get Messiah.
Christ, anointed one. We start pulling up Greek terms for this, et cetera, et cetera. So Caesar is called son of a god, God himself even. God, he's deified. He is the savior of his people. And there's a cult. So there's literally a cult. And
we need to start...
We need to start wrapping up at the end of this. There's a cult set up called the Divus Julius, the Divine Julius. The chief priest is?
It's got to be his good sometime friend, Marcus Antonius.
Who would you pick? Who's the most natural choice for the high priest of this new cult?
Someone who lives a good life, who doesn't gamble or whore around, or doesn't have a drinking problem, who's never screwed up, Marcus Antonius.
You know, that's like if they set up a cult today for, you know, you or I or or let's say Barack Obama, let's say is the leader of your country. They set up the cult of Obama. And they go, you know who we're going to pick as the priest? Charlie Sheen. Because we think, because Mark Antony was the Charlie Sheen of his day. Like,
he's got all the right attributes.
Yeah. Who is the biggest fuck up that we can come up with? I know. Let's get Mark Antony to be the high priest of this cult. But seriously, there is a Julian College of Priests.
Yep.
There was a religious cult set up to worship the divine god of Julius Caesar. Now, again, even if you don't want to take all this stuff between Julius Caesar and Jesus Christ seriously, start to piece it together, folks. The connections between these things are kind of interesting.
The point you were making, at the very, very, very least, this was, you know, this was 44 BCE. This isn't 2015 AD, whatever the hell it is. These people took this shit a lot more seriously than we do. I'm not saying that they all believed, but to them, this certainly had, this was certainly a lot more plausible than it is nowadays. And so whether Caesar was rolling his eyes, or this was just something he had to put up with, or this is how you, some of the things you did to get the job done, whatever. But for these people, for some of them, this is a very real thing. And he is now somewhere, and he's got one foot on the earth and one foot in heaven. And that, I mean, he's only got to go down from here.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we've got to make the point too, that even though this was unusual in Rome to declare a living person to be a god, it wasn't unusual across the Roman provinces.
Yeah. The East. You know, all the time.
In Egypt, they're all gods. All the kings are gods. You know, we've talked about in our Alexander show how Philip was seen to be a god. Alexander was certainly seen to be a god.
Right.
This was very common in the Hellenistic communities that Rome is now in control of, and you know, Egypt and Persia. Although the Persian kings, Darius and Xerxes and those, were considered to be favored by the gods until Alexander came along and changed that a couple hundred years before Caesar. 300 years before, more or less. So You know, this and other Roman commanders. It wasn't the first time a Roman commander in the Hellenistic communities had been honored as gods. This had happened before,
yeah.
But you know, it'd never been extended to Rome itself. So right. Now it's happening in Rome. You know, yeah. I mean,
you've got to wonder. Go ahead.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to talk more about this over the next few episodes as we wrap this thing up. But, you know, the whole Jesus cult started, obviously, in one of these provinces. It didn't start in Rome. It started down in Syria, Palestine.
Right.
Love your enemies thing. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. I've actually been thinking about putting together a series of, like, who said it quotes, Caesar and Jesus,
right.
And seeing if people can tell who said which.
I like that.
The other thing, and we'll get to this in the assassination, but, you know, Caesar gets assassinated on the 15th of March. Jesus supposedly gets killed on the 15th of Nisan, which is the Passover, or maybe a week or two after that, depending on which dating of it mm-hmm. you believe.
Right.
So they're even killed pretty much around the same date. Anyway, there's lots and lots of parallels that, again, maybe they're bullshit, but they're fascinating nonetheless, particularly when one of these two guys definitely existed and one of these, and the other one, there's really no contemporary evidence or hard evidence at all within living memory that he existed. So yeah. The balance of things, I just want to finish up with some of this God-related stuff mm-hmm. as well. Let's finish up. Let's go a few more minutes if you don't mind.
Sure. No.
I know we're running a bit long here, but we've got a lot here.
Yeah.
Now, Augustus wasn't deified in Rome until after his death, mm-hmm. but setting the style for the rest of the emperors. But he did style himself during his life as the son of a god.
Yeah, he did. That's just good PR. That's just, I mean, because he's battling it out publicly and in some ways militarily with Mark Antony. And that's just a good angle to come from. I am the son of the divine Julius Caesar. How could you not want me to win or take my side? Just a good move on his part.
But just more confirmation that officially,
yeah,
you know, in those early, you know, the last part of the BCEs.
He could say that and it wasn't snickered at.
Yeah, he was the son of a god. Julius Caesar, J.C., was a god.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this idea. So, you know, Augustus set the trend, or after his death he was deified, that the emperors, when they died, became gods.
Wow.
Vespasian, apparently on his deathbed, made the joke, I think I'm becoming a god, because he was dying.
I'm dying.
Only the most megalomaniac of the emperors were declared as living gods, but that happened later on.
Yeah.
You know, there were obviously traditions in Greek and Roman history where humans could become divine, mm-hmm. Hercules being the most famous.
Right.
You know, the Romans worshipped several gods or demigods that had once been human. They all knew the theory that gods had originated as human beings. The mask of Scipio Africanus.
Mm-hmm.
Victor over Hannibal was stored in the temple of Jupiter. His epitaph said that he had ascended into heaven.
Mm.
So these ideas weren't necessarily new. They predated Caesar. They certainly predated Christianity. They were around. They existed throughout the Roman Empire. In further Spain in the 70s BC, when the proconsul Metellus Pius arrived there, he was greeted as a savior.
Mm-hmm.
They were burning incense to him as if to a god in his efforts to quash the rebellion led by Sertorius.
Right.
After the Gracchi, our old friends, Tiberius and Gaius Gracchus, were murdered,
mm-hmm.
their supporters offered daily sacrifice at their statues as if they were the shrines of gods.
Mm.
Now. After Gaius Marius defeated the Teutones, private citizens set up shrines in their households and offered food and drink to him
as if he was
a god. They called him the third founder of Rome, after you mentioned before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to take something that you said, or just to kind of wrap my head around something you said earlier. So I guess for these people, maybe if it's either preordained or if you're just such an amazing person, if you do such amazing things long enough throughout your entire life, maybe that's just a part of your path to becoming a god. I mean, maybe they literally did see Caesar wasn't always a god, but he had done so many things, amazing things. He had defied so many odds. He had defeated all his enemies. He was a decent person or whatever. Maybe he was just becoming a god through the decades of his life of all these amazing events. I mean, I'd never thought of it like that before, but I mean, to me, that makes a lot more sense as opposed to just saying, I wasn't a god and now I'm a god. Maybe like he earned the right to be semi-divine or something like that.
Yeah. I don't really know what the philosophical framework was for how it happened, but the point is that, you know, this wasn't unusual.
I mean, it wasn't a stretch.
Well, it was unusual, but it wasn't new. It wasn't unprecedented.
Right.
Even Cicero apparently declined a temple that was, you know, when he was proconsul, off in Cilicia or somewhere like that. Mm-hmm. They offered to build a temple to him and his brother. And he declined because he didn't want to make people jealous, and he apparently used that as a point of pride later on. That when he was governor, he accepted no statues, shrines, or chariots.
Right.
So the fact that they were offering to build temples to Cicero of all people, indicates that it wasn't unusual.
Common,
His predecessor, though, as governor of Cilicia, Claudius, their old mate. He was pleased because the Cilicians offered to build him a temple and it hadn't been finished by the end of his proconsulship. And he wrote a letter to Cicero to make sure it was done and complained that Cicero didn't do enough to make sure that the temple got finished. Hey, how's that temple to me going? Don't slack off on that. Yeah, chop chop.
Yeah.
I need to be worshipped.
I just can't picture I think there was a different reason why he turned that down, because I just can't picture him turning that down. But now that he did, he could use that later on, obviously, as a mark against Caesar. Well, I turned it down. I mean, I could just so see him doing that.
Mm. You know, I guess the point I want to make here, one of the points, is that the division between humans and gods as we think of them today, well, for those of you that believe in gods.
That embrace that,
Isn't as clear. It wasn't as clear in ancient times as you might think of it today. There was a lot of crossover between whether or not humans could become gods, or gods could become humans, or could, you know, interfere in human affairs, etc., etc. Blah 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 blah. You know, we know that this stuff about the Divus Julius actually happened because Cicero makes reference in one of his speeches not long after Caesar's assassination that Mark Antony was Caesar's flamen.
Right.
So it had been officially announced. Probably he hadn't been officially, you know, made whatever.
He didn't get his official dress to be a flamen.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was so appointed and chosen, and it was publicly known.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we don't know how far the cult got off the ground before Caesar's death, but certainly did after his death.
Yes, it did.
Now, Caesar was also given the right, by the way, to be buried inside the city.
Nice.
Now, no Roman custom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Roman custom dictated that all burials happened outside the boundary of Rome, but they're like, no, he's going to get buried inside the city. And the decree was inscribed in golden letters on a silver tablet.
Nice.
Placed beneath the statue of the Capitoline Jupiter.
Wow. They meant that for that to last, yeah. And again, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but with their whole sacred boundary and the general can't come in and the army can't come in with weapons, this is a very big deal to these people that he can be buried inside the city. It is a very big deal, even though it doesn't sound like it.
Now, meanwhile, Caesar is claiming to be descended from the kings of Alba Longa. Oh, hold on. He's descended from the bloodline of kings and he's the son of a god? Where I heard that before?
Where am I going to hear that in the near future?
And on formal occasions, he wears what he claims was part of the costume of these kings, calf-length boots in red leather.
Yeah, they are.
He also wore a reddish purple tunic and toga, which is, you know, the garb of a triumphing general.
Right.
So he's kind of dressing in a kingly fashion.
Yeah.
Is part of the point here. The sources make a big deal out of this. Now, his oak laurel that he was awarded back in fucking whenever.
not good enough anymore.
Saving somebody's, yeah.
Laurel's
saving
not good
somebody's life.
Yeah.
They go, you know what? That's not heavy enough.
No.
You need a golden one.
Gold, like
one.
Your chair, buddy. The head is got to match the tail. Gold, baby.
Curtains need to match the drapes, Caesar. So they give him a golden crown.
Right.
Which has to play a role in everyone's fear that he's styling himself as a king.
Right.
And, you know, in a way, you could say that this is really a crown of thorns.
Ooh, good one. Did not see it's a that coming.
Crown of thorns because it's you know, going to come back and bite him on the ass, this crown.
Right, right. And I just have to mention, so he's got, so picture him, he's now wearing these Catholic leather red boots. He's supposedly got the long sleeves like the kings from back then. He's got his purple reddish toga of imperial general. But what some of the sources don't list is the giant black codpiece he had called the Black Russian. I don't know if you saw that at anywhere in your readings.
You're just obsessed with big black cocks, right? I don't like, just get off of Grindr for 10 minutes while we finish this episode, please.
I'm multitasking.
Ray Bear, that's your really, somebody on Twitter said that was your tag on Grindr, Ray Bear.
What I do when I'm not on the microphone with you is Ray Bear's business. All right? So don't you worry about it.
Don't go cheating on me, Ray.
You got a lot invested.
Yeah. Nothing is more vicious than a Cameron scorn. Just to wrap up, I want to talk about our old mate Cleopatra. So in late 46, we'd mentioned previously, Cleopatra and her brother/husband Ptolemy and their court arrived in Rome. They're staying at Caesar's house, one of his houses on the far bank of the Tiber.
Yeah.
They apparently stay there until after his death.
Damn.
But Caesar's still married to Calpurnia.
Sure he is.
She who does not get named very often.
She is very understanding.
Plutarch does suggest that they still slept together, but what the fuck does Plutarch know?
What was he sneak peeking in? What was he doing?
Let's not forget, too, that meanwhile, you know, Caesar's had an affair recently with another queen, you know. Bogard's wife.
Yeah, down in North Africa.
So he's banging, you know, he's sleeping with Cleopatra, he's got Calpurnia, God knows how many else.
Well, if you can get access to royal
pussy.
Then you should. I mean, it's just a good standard to have, I think.
You've heard. So if Queen Elizabeth II said,
I am there.
Hooray! You may partake of the royal pussy. Have you seen the SNL sketch about that?
No.
Holy shit. A couple of seasons ago, it was just gold, man. It's Fred Armisen playing the Queen. Mm-hmm. Bill Hader playing her gynecologist.
This feels wrong.
And the guy from The Three Amigos playing the royal.
Martin Short.
No, not him or Chevy Chase, the other one.
Steve Martin.
Martin Short. Martin Short. Yeah, okay. Martin Short playing the head of like royal protocol. And instructing Bill Hader on how one must address the royal ahem. He refers to it as the royal ahem. And you know, you must bow. Mm-hmm. You tip your hat, but only if the royal ahem tips its hat first. If it offers its hand, you will take it and shake. Oh, it is... Like, seriously, gold. Martin Short, man. I never realized seriously how funny he was until he hosted SNL that time. Yeah. Seriously funny.
Well,
and then Fred Armisen doing the Queen, man. Oh, yeah. Gold.
I can do it. Well, to answer your question, if I had the opportunity, I would have been knighted the next day. That's all I'm saying.
Doctor, The representative from Buckingham Palace is here.
Wonderful. Send him in, please.
Hello, good afternoon, Doctor. I am Rupert Smythe Pennington. And may I begin by congratulating you on your selection as OBGYN to the Duchess of Cambridge.
It's a great honour.
My role today is to instruct on the protocol of dealing with a member of the royal family.
And I've met members of the royal family before, so I assure you I'm up to speed.
Well, you may well know the protocol for having an audience with the Duchess, but there is an entirely different set of protocol when one has an audience with the royal...
I'm sorry, are you referring to the vagina?
I will mark that down that you said that word once. Say it again, you'll be deported to Australia.
Understood.
Moving on. When you meet a royal face-to-face, a small head bow is appropriate. When you meet the royal, the following is appropriate. Fah!
I'm not comfortable with that.
Well, I suggest you get comfortable with it. Because after the nod, it is proper to address it as m'lady and then greet it with the phrase, fancy meeting you here.
That seems odd.
Well, I assure you that on the day it will seem natural. Now, throughout the examination, it is imperative you say the following words to yourself in the exact order as this. This is great. This is so great. This is by far the best one of these I have ever seen. Man, oh boy, this is great.
It's gold.
I gotta go check that out. Yeah. Yeah.
You gotta watch it, man. It's awesome. Anyway. Very visual.
Cool.
Fucking, where were we? We're doing a show. Oh, yeah. I wanna talk. So, the reason I bring up Cleopatra is I wanna talk about cesarean.
Yes. Oh my God!
Not the process.
I ran across some stuff I'd never heard before. That's so cool.
Well, why don't you tell me about it? What did you come across?
I did not know that he was not even mentioned in sources until after Caesar dies. I just assumed shit had been written about him, you know, because he was born sometime in 46, and this is early 44. I mean, the kid's pushing 2 years old or whatever. You would just think that there would have been a ton of sources about him, but they had no one had really said anything until after Caesar died, and that maybe just Anthony and Cleopatra just popped out a kid somewhere during the Civil War after Caesar dies. And, oh, look, here's a legitimate Caesar's heir and not you, and give us back all his titles and rights and power and stuff like that. But just stuff like that, I had no idea that was the case.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So you say he was born in 46, but we don't know.
Exactly. No,
because there is no mention of it until later. Yeah,
total guess.
No mention of him in any accounts before Caesar's death or in Caesar's will.
Yes. What is that? Well, I had a theory on that, but basically, look, he's not a citizen that's going to piss people off. Besides, he's got family money. He'll be okay. But that is the only thing I can think of the only reason why he would not be in the will, because he's not a Roman citizen and he's not married to Cleopatra or anything like that. But that's, again, just a guess on my part.
Yeah. So he's an illegitimate non-Roman bastard child. there is... But then the question is whether or not Caesar was shooting blanks.
Right.
So Caesar's been fucking his way around shit, Rome, Asia Minor, wherever he's
North
been.
Africa.
I can't even remember where he's been. Yeah.
Probably
Egypt, North
in
Africa.
Britain. We just don't know about it.
Yeah. And as far as we know, there's no other progeny from this 20 years of banging his way around the world. So, I mean, it raises the question, did he come on their tits? That's what we really want.
I ask myself.
Did he finish on their face is really what we want to know. Was it?
I have a royal surprise for you.
The Caesar pearl necklace. He goes, hey.
You've never had one of these before.
Why are there no other reports of Caesar's children? And is Cleopatra really was Caesarion really Mark Antony's son to Cleopatra?
Right.
Or even possibly Ptolemy's.
Or some,
maybe
yeah,
they banged.
Yeah. Hey, sis, what are you doing tonight? Yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, they were married.
No, I mean brother slash husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The majority of the historical sources, though, do claim that Caesarion was Caesar's son.
Mm-hmm.
But they're writing a long time later. Yeah. The bottom line is no one really knows, obviously, but it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Suetonius claims that Oppius, Caesar's longtime confidant and assistant, wrote a book to refute the claim. Unfortunately, we don't have that. We don't really know what he said about it. But again, no mention of him in the will. But again, he wasn't a Roman citizen. He was illegitimate. But of course, the most prominent position in Caesar's will, which is written up at this time, is given to the grandson of his sister.
Mm-hmm. The 18.
Fucking stop interrupting me. All right. You say it then. Fuck you. Go. No.
The 18-year-old Caius Octavius needs a last name. Needs a third name. What's it going to be? Oh, and in the will, it says Caesar.